You're listening to the latest episode of African Research Excellence DSW in Conversation, a podcast that looks at the groundbreaking research taking place in Africa by African researchers, the obstacles and challenges they face in their work in the field of global health, and how international donors like the EU can help them to advance clinical excellence and research capacity in sub-Saharan Africa. As usual, I'm joined by my colleague and co-host, Augustine Martin. Augustine, how are you doing today?
I'm very good, Owen. How are you?
I'm good. Maybe, Augustine, you can introduce today's guest.
Yes. So we are blessed and delighted to have today Dr. Shipra Kuria with us. She's a Reproductive Health and Family Planning Program Manager from the AMREF, from the African Medical Research Foundation. And she's also an expert and research expert on HIV, TB, and malaria. She will be telling more about the correlation or the association between reproductive, maternal, and newborn health and infectious diseases, which is an area very dear to DSW.
Thank you. And a quick reminder for new listeners and existing listeners, if there's a little bit of technical issues, do remember that we're recording under COVID-19 restrictions, which means that while Augustine and I are in Brussels, we are recording remotely and our interviewee is also recording remotely. But without further ado, we'd say hello to Shipra. Shipra Kuria, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Before we get into the nitty-gritty of content, Shipra, maybe you can introduce yourself and a little bit about AMREF and the organization that you work for.
Thank you very much. So my name is Shipra Kuria. I am a medical doctor by training. Actually, I'm an obstetrician gynecologist, but I also have training in public health. For the last 7 or so years, I've been working for AMREF Health Africa, which is a large African-based international health development organization implementing over 100 programs in Africa and mainly focusing on health. We have a footprint across about 35 countries, though our offices are in fewer countries than those ones. So, Amra, our vision is to have lasting health change in Africa. And they are anchored on 3 pillars. That is human resources for health, innovative health sciences and solutions, and number 3, investments in health. And our focus is on the most vulnerable, impoverished, and hard-to-reach communities so that no one is left behind.
And Shipra, how did you come to work for AMREF? How did you arrive at AMREF 7 or so years ago?
That's an interesting question. What happened is that even I previously worked for the Ministry of Health in Kenya. I did clinical work for some time. Then I was posted to the National Reproductive Health Program, which deals with policy and also implementing different projects, coordinating different implementing partners. So that is how I kind of left clinical work. And because my main interest has been to improve health, particularly reproductive and maternal health, I found that also this kind of work is very helpful because even though I do not get to interact with clients one-on-one, I am involved in policy work and also guidelines, training packages, that kind of work, which now has broader influence. It supports many more health workers than what I could do as a person. And it is in this, while doing this work, that I also got interested in experiencing work in the international health NGO. And that is how I ended up in AMREF, because their vision and the work they do is very much in line with my personal interests.
You've worked there for, I mean, a good few years now. How do you feel that the field of reproductive and maternal health has changed in the years that you, has it changed much? How much progress has been made in women's health in the past few years?
Now working in AMREF, I am able to work not only in Kenya, but across the region, which is an advantage for me. And what I see is that a lot of progress has been made in terms of improving the health services, the quality of health services, because of the focus internationally, starting with the MDGs. I joined public health when we were implementing the MDGs, and now in the era of SDGs, there is a lot of focus in reproductive maternal health and generally public health. And so progress has been made. There is really thought of those who are less reached, focusing on them. But what I can say is that even though a lot of progress has been made, a lot of things have changed. We now have more technology, more information available, and that has also been utilized. So now we have clients who are more informed, more involved, but still we have not reached where we would like to be. We still have a reasonable proportion of people who are still left behind, who are like still many years behind compared to where the world is. That's what I can say. And this is where my focus and our focus as an organization is.
You said such big progress has been made, but at the same time, so many people are still not being able to benefit from that progress. What are the reasons behind that?
I would say that the health system in sub-Saharan Africa faces several challenges. These challenges are the ones that make it difficult to reach everybody. If you think of the six pillars that the WHO has described, I would say there are challenges across all those pillars. But main ones, in my view, is leadership and governance. We have a challenge with that. And that carries a lot because leadership dictates a lot of things. So in this leadership, we have a bit of weakness, particularly in public health leadership and management, so that we have limited community participation in planning, management, you know, of health services. But we also have a challenge with resources. Of course, they are limited, but even what we have in terms of efficiency in allocation and use, it's a challenge. And also closely related to leadership and governance is also an issue of lack of transparency and accountability. Because of the issue of funding and challenges in leadership, these challenges translate in all the other pillars. For example, if you think of the health workforce, we have shortages. The ones we have, they are not well distributed. So there are a lot of inequities. While some areas like urban areas have more health workers probably than they need, we have areas where health workers are very scarce. Then, of course, we have limitations, whether in health information system, so that we are not able to really use evidence-based decision-making. Our essential medicines and products are also inadequate because of finances, but also poor decisions. Yeah, and because of all those challenges, then service delivery is a challenge. So, particularly to the marginalized. So, as a summary, that's what I would say.
I mean, we will talk in a minute in about the leadership and resource challenges, because indeed those are recurrent problems that our interviews bring forward, and I think they are to some extent unresolvable, because we will never have the amount of resources that we need. to deal with all the different SDG challenges. But before we tackle those, I wanted to get into one of the solutions for those problems that we've heard also often, which is addressing health across the board instead of through silos. The silo approach versus a more cross-cutting, more horizontal approaches to health, or more one health approaches, if you want. And I think this is quite interesting to see your portfolio as a researcher, because you actually have a very, very broad portfolio. You're researching on HIV, TB, and malaria on one hand, but you're also leading the research on reproductive, maternal, newborn, and child health, or RMNCH, as we put it to shorten. Tell us a little bit more about the connection between both research areas that are seemingly not so connected, RMNCH and HIV, TB, and malaria research.
When we look at the underlying issues, whether it's reproductive maternal health issues, HIV, AIDS, and other communicable diseases, we have some underlying challenges. And it's what we call the social determinants of health. These determinants of health cut across regardless of which area of health one is looking at. An example is poverty. You will find that the poor, they are the ones who are most affected by HIV, by TB, and all other communicable diseases. But they are also the ones who suffer the most when it comes to poor maternal and child health outcomes. So that tells us that by standalone programming, just looking at HIV as HIV, maternal health as maternal health, will actually not hit the problem. So what we do is to look at the social determinants of health as we are looking at the different areas. So another example besides poverty is something like gender. You find that gender inequities drive HIV infections because mainly women are disadvantaged, they are not empowered, so that a disease like HIV, they may not be able to make sure that the partner uses a condom or that the partner is tested, you know, because of the inequities in power. And it's also the same way when it comes to maternal health, utilization of services. The woman may not be empowered enough to be able to choose that I will go for services, I will go for skilled delivery, I will go for family planning. So you see, the underlying issues are more or less the same. And so even when we do research, if we look at really the root causes of why is HIV, TB, and malaria proliferating in our setup, we will see that those are the same reasons that contribute to poor maternal and child health.
Yeah, I mean, this is really a really important point. And it's something that at DSW we care very much about, which is the contributions of gender inequalities to health inequalities and to, you know, disability, morbidity, and mortality. And I wonder if when you're planning in AMREF health interventions, how do you integrate all these different elements you just mentioned? Could you give us an example of a project, for instance, that you have been conducting recently where you have this integrated approach when you're connecting the impact of gender inequalities with HIV, you know, and the impact of HIV in child health because of mother-to-child transmission, for instance, all these different pieces that are seemingly disconnected?
I'll give you an example of a project that is still ongoing. It's called Afiatimiza. Afiatimiza is a Kiswahili word. But in many ways, it represents the way we do programming in AMREF. Let me start by saying one of the challenges in integrating is the way donor fads come. Because as you are aware, donor fads come as HIV fads, RMNCAH, and even RMNCAH, not everything. A donor may say, I want to focus on family planning, or I want to focus on maternal health, basic emergency care, or something like that. But how we try to do it is to bring integration as much as possible. So, for example, when we think of this project that I'm talking about, it is heavily HIV. And so when we are doing programming, we think of those underlying factors, you know, the gender inequalities, poverty, so that we do a lot of community engagement and community empowerment. So we tackle it not just for HIV, not just for maternal health. Of course, there is technical information that we have to give. For example, you've talked of PMTCT. There is specific information that we'll give community on that. But there is also the general information on utilization of services, whether for HIV, whether for TB, whether for maternal health. So we try to integrate as much as possible so that when we go to the community is not just hearing one thing, for example, HIV, so that they think, is HIV the most important thing? It is important, but even the other aspects are important. So we look at gender issues as cutting across. And when we go to a community, we find out what are their issues. For example, one of the things that arise is a lot of myths and misconceptions. Of course, some of them driven by the patriarchal nature of communities and gender imbalance. But then we do this cutting across, but then we give specific messages. Now, depending on what, because each project will have specific targets, whether for HIV services, for TB services, for maternal health services, and the program may not be able to integrate everything, but at the end of the day, in terms of utilization of services and promoting healthy behavior, that cuts across quite a bit.
Yes, that's absolutely critical indeed. I mean, there is a lot of overlap between the work that ANBREF does in this area and what DSW does. Because, I mean, you may know through other colleagues as well that DSW brand, or it's built around community empowerment and especially youth empowerment and women's and girls empowerment programs. And this is one of the key aspects one of the key approaches we use to tackle health challenges is precisely informing the communities and you know, activating them to take responsibility of their own health, but also responsibility for the community's health, which is indeed a critical aspect to achieve those health impacts. But I want to get back to the question, or to the point, about leadership and resources, because indeed, one of the ways that leaders should identify those priorities and steer those global health priorities and decide how funding should be distributed is by engaging, you know, local communities by bottom-up approaches. This is not always the case, as you mentioned. You were illustrating the case of donors that come with their own agendas, and then you need to navigate those requests and try to integrate them into a broader approach. This is something we're really, I think, still struggling with, these top-down approaches to funding priorities. And one of the hopes is that for the future programming of European Union funding in particular, there is a much more robust engagement of stakeholders. And this is one of the purposes of this podcast, is precisely to raise the voice and visibilize local communities and local actors, actors that are working with those communities and that can really bring those fresh perspectives from the ground. So I wanted to tap a little bit more into the the priorities and the prioritization of EU fundings in particular. And I think one of the best ways to do it is perhaps look at experiences you have had in international projects or European Union funded projects. So have you personally, or do you know of European Union projects or international projects that have been implemented in the region? And can you give us an example of how those projects were agreed, how the priorities were agreed, whether there were some consultations with, you know, affected communities, and if and what kind of ways to improve those processes can you think of?
Yes, as AMREF, we have implemented some projects funded by European Union. And one of the projects that I think about is where AMREF was able to develop a community-based approach or model that involved a lot of discussion with the community. So in this sense, I can say that the European Union was open to AMREF discussing with the community, finding out what their issues are, what their obstacles are, and then allowing AMREF to come up with a model that suits the community. And this was good because a European Union did not come with a prescription of this is what we want you to do. Yes, the outcomes, we knew what the outcomes desired were, which were actually to increase utilization of services, and actually not just one type of services. It was very integrated because the focus was the focus was a pastoralist community, and because they are nomadic, they move around, their utilization of services, whether HIV, maternal health, TB, they were all low. So this model allowed AMREF to go in and see what could be done. And what the AMREF did was to work with community health volunteers and train them on how to reach the community with information on importance of accessing services. But AMREF also dealt with the infrastructure part. One of the main challenges of pastoralist communities is that they live in a very widely spread geographical area, so it is, and they move around. So it is impossible to have the 5 kilometer recommendation of health facilities in the community. So what AMREF did was to come up with the idea of using containers as clinics, refurbish them, and then put them along the migratory routes. And that way the community, and then they made the containers like a one-stop clinic kind of thing, where HIV, STI services, TB, and maternal health services were available. And then at the community level, these health volunteers were giving information and telling the community where they can find these services. And that worked because the community was able to increase their utilization of services across board, not just one area of health. And I think this kind of approach should be encouraged for European Union, but also for other donors.
I think our EU colleagues will be delighted to hear you to hear that one of the best practice examples that you gave was European Union funding. I think it's great. It's really good news, and it's something we would definitely like to see becoming a kind of a gold standard of health programming. I have one follow-up question on that before leaving the last words to Owen. and it is about the feedback between projects and policies. Because one of the things we think are missing still in health interventions is how those projects inform policies once they are implemented. How this new knowledge and this expertise that you've learned by implementing the project and how these new capabilities that you've put in place are taken into account when new future interventions and future policies are being designed in that area. So I was curious to hear if, for instance, in the case of this European Union project or other previous projects you've implemented, if there was some sort of political feedback, if you had the opportunity to discuss your findings with, the Kenyan government or the European Union delegation in Kenya or other audiences, not just in terms of reporting, the project itself, but actually to talk about the broader impact and how can you build up, future interventions in that area to maximize and to scale up those health outcomes. Is that the case? Is the case that you have these follow-up discussions or the project just ends and, that's pretty much it?
That's a very good question and an important one. We do our best as AMREF to continuously give feedback to the governments. For example, in Kenya, we have county governments. We have worked closely with them, and there are examples of feedback that they have taken up, and even models they have taken and encouraged them to be used even by other implementing partners. Also for donors, we put effort to continuously discuss with them, give them feedback. And sometimes we have seen that we are invited to give input when they are designing projects. Of course, the issue is you give input, but the way it is taken or the way it is used, now that may be a bit different. But I would say, yes, that is happening, but it needs to happen even more because it also depends on how much opportunity an organization is given. But as AMREF, we work very, very closely with governments, so that continuous feedback is there. And we also use our project outcomes to do advocacy so that the government can adapt some things. And there have been good outcomes, not always, but sometimes.
Yeah. Sorry. I guess, Shipra, I have one final question. And that's really, it's a simple one, but for me to ask, maybe not for you to answer. But if you had one key message that you would want our audience to remember from our conversation today and from your work that you've been doing, and everything you've talked about with Augustine, what would that one message be?
The message I would say is that whatever projects we design, they should be allowed to have flexibility to meet the needs of the community. And communities are quite different. So the way the projects will work in Turkana may be a bit different from the way they'll work in Central or in another country somewhere. So I think that is what is most important. So as donors give us funding and we appreciate the funding, it is good to remember that. And it is good to have continued working together. The implementing organizations such as AMREF, the governments who have the primary mandate of taking care of their people, and the donors who are coming in to help alleviate the suffering of the people because, of course, resources are limited. So I think that is what I would say. Communities to be at the center of whatever we do.
I think that's a beautiful way to put an end to this conversation. Thank you so much, Shipra, for sharing your expertise and your insights with us. It was really appreciated.
Thank you, Shipra. And that's it for today's episode of African Research Excellence DSW in Conversation. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and all good podcast platforms. You can find more information about DSW at dsw.org and across our social channels on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Until next time.